Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Weekend Worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the week, sort of a heads up on what the newsroom might be following for the upcoming weeks. It is the third weekend of April 2026, Saturday the 18th, and Sunday the 19th. I'm Carl Lengel, your host. If you are a regular listener to the Worm podcast, you've already figured out the advantage to this delivery method. Listening and waiting for the broadcast to get to the information doesn't always suit your circumstances. The podcast is up to date, on demand, on your schedule. While this podcast is just a package of all the day's news stories broadcast on YPR, it does take time to assemble, and the Weekend Worm is sort of our laboratory as we develop news programming for our new environment. The point is, the news staff works very hard every day, weekends too, to deliver the information we find our listeners say is critical to staying informed in these chaotic times. Thank you for recognizing that the Worm and public radio matter to our listeners. Snowpack in the West typically reaches its highest level in early April, but that has not happened this year. Now, drought persists, setting up conditions for wildfires and low water supply. And if that's not enough, Montana Public Radio's Ellis Julin reports, this warm, snowless winter points to a warming climate and trouble for Montana farmers.
It's a classic spring day in Montana. The birds are back. And in a small valley just outside Missoula, Marshall Creek is running high with snowmelt.
It's very unusual that it feels spring-like in Missoula.
This is Kyle Vasinski. He works for the Montana Climate Office. Usually runoff like this happens in early May, but it's late March and he's surrounded by bare, muddy ground. Vasinski walks with state climatologist Kelsey Jensko at what used to be the base of a ski hill on Marshall Mountain. Jensko says people often ask him what Montana's climate future will look like.
We're experiencing that this year. It's no longer in the future. This is climate change in Montana.
This family-owned ski hill stopped operating in 2002. Vasinski says that's because there wasn't enough consistent snow.
We've got a boarded up ski area right in front of us that looks like a time capsule of the late 90s.
There's still a faded lilac-colored chairlift and the old lodge building with a clock tower forever showing 4 p.m. Marshall closed after a particularly bad winter. This year, ski resorts across the West recorded some of their lowest snow totals in decades. The warmer winter temperatures put Montana and much of the West in a snow drought. It means snowpacks are below average across the region. Daniel Swain is a climate scientist with the California Institute for Water Resources.
This was an astonishing heat event in that a large swath of the country experienced the warmest temperatures that have ever occurred in any March.
This is Montana's second warmest winter on record. Researchers involved with the World Weather Attribution found that the spring's heat waves would have been virtually impossible without climate change. In a typical year, snowpack remains at mid to high elevations well into the summer. An average snowpack acts like a natural water tower, slowly releasing water as it melts. That keeps rivers running high and reservoirs full. But the snowmelt that's happening now, Swain explains,
is snowmelt that can't happen later.
The early runoff saturated soils, which lowers wildfire risks for some regions this spring, but Swain says,
and that means that later in the summer, it's much more likely that the higher elevation forests will dry out as we get toward the middle or the end of the long dry summer.
But the lack of snow doesn't just mean a potentially busy wildfire year. Standing by a rushing river of early runoff, Jensko says,
the problem is that water is leaving the system earlier than we would like it to.
Montana's grain-growing regions are mostly dryland operations, meaning they don't irrigate and they rely entirely on the snow or rain to water crops. A lot of farms plant winter wheat, which grows underneath the buffer of snowpack in a typical year. But this year, that didn't happen.
The problem is that water is leaving the system earlier than we would like it to.
Jensko says now that winter wheat is exposed,
what we're seeing in a lot of cases across rain-fed dryland areas of central and eastern Montana is the emergence of winter wheat.
Jensko is part of a team that assesses drought conditions across Montana every week. He says they're already discussing how farmers will fare in the warmer months ahead. The National Weather Service's Climate Prediction Center forecasts drought will expand in much of the western U.S. in the coming months. In Missoula, I'm Ellis Julin.
Wyoming just experienced an abnormally warm winter, as KHOL's Jenna McMurtry reports. It now means signs of spring are here earlier than ever.
Aspen trees don't usually bud green leaves until May in the Tetons. But this year, Trevor Bloom says trees are already starting to green as early as April.
We were finding that spring flowering events were happening about 17 days earlier now than they were in the 1970s. But this year, my colleague found that everything's happening between 33 and 38 days earlier than the 1970s, which is pretty wild.
On January 31st, the University of Wyoming climate researcher took a sample from the backyard of his Jackson home that showed a tree already beginning to bud. Bloom wouldn't call this a trend, but rather a sign of an extreme winter made more extreme by climate change. I'm Jenna McMurtry, KHOL News.
As the war in Iran continues, 40 state legislators are asking Montana's congressional delegation for oversight and review of the United States' involvement in the Iran war as a ceasefire continues. The group of legislators, including eight Republicans, sent a letter to Montana's congressional delegation earlier this week. Democratic Representative Tom France of Missoula said, absent legislation, leadership should demand answers.
I think the Congress needs to call in the Pentagon. It needs to call in the president's spokespeople and say, what really was the strategy? How are we going to get out of this? And what are the costs going to be to the American public and the American Treasury?
This past Thursday, the U.S. House of Representatives shot down a bid to pull American troops out of Iran until Congress provides authorization. It's one of multiple attempts so far to rein in U.S. military action in Iran, and it failed along party lines, with Representatives Troy Downing and Ryan Zinke voting against. YPR reached out to Montana's congressional delegation. In an email, Downing said Congress, quote, reserves the right to permit the president to conduct military activity for a limited duration under the War Powers Resolution, unquote. A spokesperson with the U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy said he supports the Trump administration's military action in Iran. YPR did not receive a response from Senator Steve Daines or Representative Ryan Zinke. Business owners in rural Montana say inflation and high fuel prices combined with the Canadian tourism slump is hitting their bottom lines. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien filed this report.
Scobie's Leanna Handren told a University of Montana roundtable Monday that she keeps conversation apolitical these days with what's left of her Canadian clientele. Handren's home furnishings store is just 14 miles from Canada on the high plains of northeastern Montana.
A quarter of my business used to literally come out of Canada or go to Canada, and now we're probably under 5%.
Montana Department of Commerce tourism economist Jacob Starner says Canadian spending in the state dropped nearly 20% between 2024 and last year. He suspects businesses that rely on Canadian tourism will face continued headwinds, possibly through next year.
All of these costs, Canadian dollar depreciation, lower than cost oil prices, increased cost of visitation, and then, of course, the difficult policy and tariff environment. These things have driven Canadians to seek alternatives.
It's not just the Canadians. Many attendees say Americans are also tightening their belts. Sarah McKinney owns rentals and a hotel in Haver on Montana's High Line.
We should be so busy right now with people coming into town to do things, to explore, and it is just dead in the water.
She suspects high gas prices are keeping Americans closer to home these days. Several attendees of Monday's rural entrepreneurship event feel their frustrations and concerns are unheard by politicians. Again, Haver's Sarah McKinney.
Like, Trump does not know how the gas price and everything affects small business when nobody drives by it. I don't know how to get them to listen to the people who are paying taxes.
Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
And in Wyoming, a new analysis shows that new policies under the second Trump administration will negatively impact most Wyomingites. Eric Galatas with the Wyoming News Service tells us more.
In 2026, the top 20% of earners will get a $380 billion tax cut, with $117 billion going to the richest 1% alone. Michael Ettlinger with the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy says in Wyoming, middle-income people are going to pay about $1,430 more in 2026 than if we had just continued the tax policies we'd had.
Overall, on average, people in the bottom 95% of the income distribution are going to see taxes go up, whereas people in the top 5% are going to see taxes go down.
Tax cuts passed under the Republican signature One Big Beautiful Bill Act are projected to add $4.6 trillion to the national debt. In an effort to reduce that price tag, lawmakers cut $1.2 trillion in spending, largely from health care. Republicans have long argued that allowing Americans to keep more of their earnings will boost the economy, which will create more jobs and increase revenues. I'm Eric Galatas.
It is a midterm election year, and Montana's primary election is Tuesday, June 2nd. Yellowstone Public Radio and Montana Public Radio are working to share profiles on candidates running for federal office in 2026. The interviews in this series began airing and posting this past Monday, the 13th, at 7:44 in the morning and again at 5:44 during All Things Considered. You can also hear the interviews at our website, ypradio.org. In political stories developing this past week, Shaley Rager filed 3 reports on Democrats in debates. We start with the report on Democrats competing to represent eastern Montana in the U.S. House, who took to the debate stage in Helena last weekend. The 3 candidates covered many issues, including how they each plan to address health care costs.
The Democrats vying for their party's nomination to run in the Eastern District are Brian Miller, a Helena attorney, Sam Lux, a farrier from Great Falls, and Jonathan Windy Boy, a state senator from Box Elder. They agree on several issues, including opposing the Iran war and repealing the One Big Beautiful Bill. They argue the bill's cuts to Medicaid funding will be detrimental to rural Montana. On healthcare costs, Miller says the Affordable Care Act hasn't worked because of its broad mandates. He proposed having each state create their own public healthcare systems.
So let's let it come from the ground up. Some states will come up with good ideas, some will try things. Let's let the experimentation occur, and it's going to take a minute, and we have to be patient.
Lux agreed that the ACA is not working as intended. He called for repealing the subsidies recipients use to pay for private health coverage on the marketplace. He said that funding should instead go towards building a single-payer system.
They can actually provide basic coverage, opt-in coverage, for every single American.
Windy Boy says he supports a universal healthcare model, but he said he's more concerned with the funding cuts and tighter eligibility requirements for Medicaid expansion.
If the best we can get out of this Congress of having Medicaid reinstituted back in the system, I'll support that too.
Whoever wins the primary will face Republican incumbent Congressman Troy Downing, who's unopposed in the GOP primary. Libertarian Patrick McCracken and Independent Michael Eisenhower are also in the race. Montana's primary is June 2nd. In Helena, I'm Shaley Rager.
Before we hear Shaley's report on the Democrats vying for the Western U.S. House seat, there was a little drama midweek. Thursday, we heard a state senator and congressional candidate was accused of sexual abuse and suspended his campaign, according to the Montana Democratic Party. Party Chair Shannon O'Brien said she was, quote, deeply troubled to learn about allegations of serious sexual abuse, unquote, against Senator Jonathan Windy Boy of Box Elder. O'Brien called for an investigation and for Windy Boy to resign from the state Senate. In a video posted to social media, Windy Boy said he's withdrawing from the race for Montana's Eastern Congressional District due to health issues. He did not address the allegations. The video was later deleted. Windy Boy did not return Montana Public Radio's request for comment. As the race is heating up for Democrats in the Western Congressional District, the 4 candidates have largely been cordial but traded sharp criticisms during their debate. Here's Shaley Rager again.
The candidates are Matt Rains, a veteran and Sims rancher, Sam Forstag, a Missoula smoke jumper and organizer, Russell Cleveland, a veteran and entrepreneur from St. Regis, and Ryan Bussey, a Kalispell author and former firearms executive. Cleveland was the first to aim criticism at Forstag for being endorsed by the Federation of Unions, AFL-CIO. Cleveland argues Forstag will be beholden to their support for data centers in Montana.
We have to be careful about who we hitch our wagon to. Now is not the time for picking the best show pony. It's picking who's going to stand up for the best interests of Montana.
Bussey accused Forstag of encouraging dark money to flood the race.
One of the tenets of my campaign is that I think we should hold ourselves to a higher standard, Democrats to a higher standard.
Forstag responded that he's not taking corporate PAC donations and returned fire for both Bussey and Cleveland for running with vast personal wealth. He said he's proud to be endorsed by unions.
We got folks on this stage, someone who was worth $25 million, coming after the only working class candidate in this race for support from labor unions. We should be outraged.
Rains was left largely unscathed by his opponents. He's taking a looser approach to campaign finance, saying it'd take millions of dollars to run the race until November.
And as much as I love to know that the grassroots movement is there and split four ways, it's not going to get us across the finish line, and we're going to be looking at a Republican back in Congress representing Montana.
Whoever wins the June 2nd Democratic primary will advance to the general election. The Western House seat is open as Republican incumbent Ryan Zinke is not seeking re-election. In Helena, I'm Shaylee Rager.
Democrats competing for Montana's open U.S. Senate seat met on the debate stage for the first time in Helena. Again, Montana Public Radio Shaylee Rager filed this report later in the week.
The candidates seeking the Democratic nomination are Riley Neal, a former legislator and Livingston business owner, Michael Blackwolf, the historic preservation officer for the Fort Belknap Indian community, Michael Hummert, a Helena Navy veteran and former business owner, and Alani Bankhead, a Helena Air Force veteran and leadership coach. They're running for the seat held by Republican U.S. Senator Steve Daines, who is not seeking re-election. The widening wealth gap is one of the top issues in Montana the Democrats discussed. The candidates each pitched varying approaches. Hummert says balancing the federal government's budget would be his top priority.
When we spend more money than we take in as a nation, who does that benefit? Doesn't benefit anybody in this room. It benefits billionaires. It benefits corporations. It benefits other countries.
Bankhead says Montana has experience reining in power and money, referring to the Copper Kings. She proposed starting with tax policy.
Everybody should pay their fair share of taxes, and we should be bringing a lot of that economy down to the Main Street.
Neal called for a bottom-up approach and better pay for workers.
We need to raise the federal minimum wage. We need industry in Montana, but we need to invite industry that's going to pay workers fairly.
Blackwolf agreed with focusing on workers and local economies.
We need to really step up and support our unions. We need to ensure that our Made in Montana gets pushed forward.
The winner of the Democratic primary is likely to face Republican attorney Kurt Almy, who Daines endorsed after dropping out of the race at the 11th hour. Independent candidate Seth Bodner is also angling for a spot on the ballot. In Helena, I'm Shaylee Rager.
Educational issues continue to hold attention in the news. Montana University system officials have unanimously agreed to hire the University of Montana's next president. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien fills us in.
It took the Montana Board of Regents less than 10 minutes Tuesday to select Jeremiah Shin as UM's 20th president.
Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Excellent.
Student Regent Carter Jasper said he's excited for UM.
I had the pleasure of talking with Dr. Shin a couple of times, and each conversation was more remarkable than the last. Dr. Shin is an excellent candidate and will be an excellent leader for the University of Montana.
Shin currently serves as interim president of Boise State University. In a statement included in a UM press release this week, Shin is quoted as saying, "I look forward to joining this extraordinary team to build on its strong foundation and to shape a bright future together," end quote. His selection follows a national search that drew more than 70 applicants from across the country. He's replacing Seth Bodner, who resigned earlier this year to run as an independent for Montana's U.S. Senate race. Shin begins his presidency July 1st. The position's annual salary is $467,000. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
For 45 years, the focus of the Montana Women's Run has been on health and camaraderie among women of all ages and abilities. YPR's Kay Erickson shares more on the history of the annual Saturday Before Mother's Day event.
It began in 1982 as a 5K and a 10K women's race at Pioneer Park near downtown Billings, put on by the men of the Yellowstone Rim Runners Running Club. About 200-plus women were entered. Participation waned until a group of women took over the race in 1986 to keep the event alive. They lined up sponsors and door prizes, changed the distances to 2 miles and 5 miles, and eventually settled on a downtown course. These women were visionary, says Eki Wedgel, a Women's Run board member, volunteer, and longtime participant. They were the ones that came up with a long-sleeve pink T-shirt.
In 1986, there was no such thing as a pink T-shirt for a race.
The long-sleeve T-shirt stayed. The run grew to almost 9,000 entries back in 2015. Then COVID hit and the numbers dropped. In 2025, entries were back up to around 5,000. Still one of the largest races in Montana and one of the largest women's events in the region. Since 1994, the race has given money back to the local community, which to date has been nearly $2 million, going to local groups like the Billings YWCA and the MSU Billings and Rocky Mountain College Women's Cross Country Scholarships. The run is Saturday morning, May 9th. Participants can walk, run, or wheelchair either distance. The run also offers a virtual 5-mile and 2-mile option. Wedgel, who participated in the very first race in 1982, says the best thing about the race is the camaraderie.
And the feeling of being downtown with all these women that are doing the same thing you're doing. And you don't know that until you get together with them.
Information and registration can be found at the race website, womensrun.org. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
That's the Weekend Worm for this third weekend of April 2026. We'll have another episode of the Worm Monday, and we'll keep the weekend editions coming too. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.